Trust me. 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 Trust me.
What's up, Snake Punchers, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. I'm your host, Tyler, generally a co-host, now full-time host for this week, and we're going to be talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme's immensely successful film, Hard Target, from 1993. Before we get to our guest, let me give you the rundown that we usually do. If you're joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-NJNM or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can find this and every other episode and every other freaking review we have at notjustnewmovies.com. My guest tonight, the author of The Death of Blogging, Blogging Dies in 2012, also from the plainfieldblog.com, Panther Joe Leninger. Panther, how are you?
You know, Tyler, I used to really hate New Orleans. Now I only kind of hate New Orleans after watching this movie.
That's good to know, because New Orleans is heavily featured in this film with Van Damme. And the peoples of New Orleans are also on full display.
No, they weren't. No, they weren't.
Way. You had the homeless people just wandering around, like...
We'll get to that later.
You can't just have the guy in dreadlocks throwing beads. He's only there once a year.
Yeah, still, I mean, it was like Dodge City circa like 1600 over up in that movie.
That's a good comparison. I like it. Yeah. So what have you been up to lately? What's the deal with Joe? Like our listeners
just
probably
transitioning out of the blogosphere. Just get I think we're starting to move on from the computer, getting back into the worldosphere, I think some people call it.
Yeah, well, the worldosphere or just the world seems to work as well.
Now
you're the author of, or you know, the author of this campaign, The Death of Blogging, where blogging actually dies in 2012. How do you relate that to the current events that are going on in the internet right now, with the internet community all abreast with their wrist guards raised against the calamity that might result from congressional interference on the internet and its subsidies.
Wow, that was verbose.
I know. I don't think half of it made sense, but anyway.
Yeah, the internet is swelling right now. It's swollen so much that it's going to pop, and we're all going to realize that we've been spending too much time on the internet. We're going to get back to our jobs, focus on the family, and Mitt Romney.
Is he the cause, or is he
just... No, that's just my third point, Mitt Romney.
Okay. Yeah, I've been thinking about this. Like, what if the internet died, and we were just left to our own devices? Like, what would a world like that be after the internet age?
Would it be like the Middle Ages? They showcased that in that Will Smith movie, I Am Legend.
Oh, where only one guy's alive?
Pretty much.
And a dog gets eaten. Spoiler alert.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you call somebody up on the phone. It's like ring, ring, and you go, hello. You know, you don't have the internet anymore. So you're like, yeah, I read this really great book this week. And the other guy's like, well, I went to this really awesome museum. And they're just like, you know, let's just talk on the phone for hours or possibly meet up for a coffee/book discussion.
Yeah, it's really sad, Tyler. There, I work with a bunch of people who aren't anything like me, and I was trying to talk to them about SOPA this week, and they had no idea what I was talking about or have even heard of the issue. So it just goes to show that people, you know, me and you are both kind of entrenched in the wrestling thing right now, too. It just goes to show the voice on the internet just isn't sometimes as loud as you think it would be.
Yeah, I think while you're on the internet, it seems like it's the most important thing in the world, but then if you turn your computer off for a second, you realize that, hey, it's probably not the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, and everyone's a blogger now. It's just, that's what the... there was a really funny line from a Saturday Night Live a couple weeks ago where... I forget what
skit
there was, but it was like, oh, that's what the world needs is more writers, doctors, or teachers.
It was the one where the people were coming in and they had never been told, like, that they
were doing
anything bad, and so, like, they just kept going with their dreams even though they weren't successful at them at all.
You can do anything, I think it was called.
Yeah. Joe mentioned SOPA, which, S-O-P-A, which stands for the Stop Online Piracy Act, which was a recent piece of legislation that was going to go through. Yes, literal pirates. It was going to go through, and the internet kind of had a problem with it. Not in the sense that they liked piracy. I'm sure some people like piracy, but more so the open-endedness of the wording of the actual legislation that could have led to other things. And some were saying the destruction of the internet as if it's a physical thing. But it's now gone, so you can rest easy.
Wait, did the bill get shut down?
Yeah, the guy who had submitted it withdrew it from the
Really?
Computer. Yeah.
Surprisingly, I didn't even hear anything of that.
Yeah, that it kind of after Wikipedia blacked out, everybody just didn't care anymore. And then I went to CNN and I saw that it actually had been there was actually a wave of change in Congress, and now they don't like it anymore.
Oh man, that was my when I started blogging Dies in 2012. That was. And I heard about that back in, I don't know, September or October. I was like, man, that could work.
Yeah, but I kind of side with you, Joe. I mean, I don't want to go as far as, you know, in support of SOPA. But, Joe, you know, if you need a Blogging Dies partner, man, Death of Blogging, I'll be there after the end, man, the apocalypse.
All right, sweet. I will, you can be my, I'll be Will Smith and you be the,
Samantha the dog?
I think. But not as dead.
Okay, spoiler. All right, so now that we're done with that tangent, let's go to the character name game. Joe, you ready for this? I got the character name game for you.
Is it Joe Paterno?
No, nor is it a character that Joe Paterno played. May he rest.
Rest in peace, Joe Pa.
No, what we usually do with the character name game, and generally, if Ben's around, it's got to have some correlation to a movie that was released over the weekend. And what I give is a character's name, and you have to guess which movie it's from.
All right.
What movie the character is from. So I have the character for this week, and let me just get it up because I closed the window that actually had it in there. So I'm going to give it to you in 2 seconds. I'm going to keep talking because I'm
actually... No one's a professional anymore.
I've never considered myself a professional on the internet because I don't think professionalism can exist on the internet. But I digress. That's why if you read my reviews, they there's no sense of professionalism at all.
We're all stargazers, Tyler.
Dreamweaver.
Yeah, yeah!
The character name game for this week is Jack T. Colton. Jack
Paparazzi.
T. Colton. Incorrect. Why don't we wait until the end of the end of the episode and see if you can guess which movie the character Jack T. Colton is in. Agreed?
Okay.
Agreed. So
whatever.
Usually move into the media consume section after this, so let's do so right now. Media consume section generally involves like concerts we go to, other movies we may have seen this week, television shows, books we've read. Countries we've overthrown the governments at, all that kind of stuff applies into the media consume. So let's start with Panther Joe. What have you been consuming in the last couple days?
Well, I'm just going to talk about a couple things that probably a lot of people that even listen to the show don't watch or don't care about, but
Engage.
I know we have some overlap. The first is a Food Network reality contest show called Rachel versus Guy Celebrity Cook-Off, I believe is the full title.
Yeah, I'm about to sign off, so I'll catch you later.
if you just type in Rachel versus Guy on your guide, it'll come up. But
not gonna be.
It's a pretty fun show. It's a stupid show, but it basically eight quote-unquote celebrities compete in this cooking competition. They're kind of coached by Guy Fieri and Rachel Ray, Food Network's go-to stars. Right. And the winner at the end gets to donate $50,000 to their charity of choice. So every week they do these gimmicky competitions, and then one person sent home. And right now we're down to four people.
Julio's still in this?
Julio is still in it, and he is a star, born-again star. That guy... I think he's pretty funny personally. He makes tasty looking food, and he's got a pretty good personality.
Doesn't he only have like five dreads left?
Yeah, I think he makes his own hats now, where they have different slots where the hair comes out of. Like he can make them into handlebars that come out either side, kind of like an alien.
Nice.
Or one up top. but yeah, he's pretty entertaining. Summer Sanders, spoiler alert, who's not on there anymore. She brought it. Cheech Marin was okay.
Summer Sanders from Figure It Out or whatever that show was called.
Figure It Out and the MTV Beach Games or whatever it was called. still looking pretty good for like 40, 45. I don't know.
Oh, there's good money at Nickelodeon.
Yeah, but you know, a guy I gotta not root for on there is Lou Diamond Phillips, who I'd venture to say is the most well-known celebrity, if that says
really?
A lot. Yeah, they call him LDP for short.
I thought for sure Coolio would be the most well-known celebrity of the non-celebrities on
well,
that show.
Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, get your booty on the floor. You know, it's like 12 years old now. Lou Diamond Phillips was on 24, I believe.
He looks like Don the Dragon Wilson.
you should check it out, especially if you've come in contact with Guy Fieri and find him at all entertaining. I mean, you get him in small doses where he says stuff like, you know, that's out of bounds, or like that's on point, and you know he just screams at the food.
I could eat this off a flip flop.
Yeah, exactly. He could probably do that.
It's weird. It's a weird relationship with me, because I love Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, but I really don't care for the host. Like, if they replaced the host with someone else, I'd be completely happy.
Wasn't Mark Summers the original host of that?
No, he's the host of Unwrapped, another Food Network show.
Oh, you know what I'm thinking of? It was Al Roker was the original host of that, I believe.
No, he had a show called Roker on the Road.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah, I used to watch the hell out of that show, too. I'm a big fan of Al Roker.
No, I mean, I like, don't get me wrong, I like Guy Fieri, but you have to. Like, I went through a binge where, like, I saw Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives for the first time, and right. I had to be like, oh my god, I gotta watch, like, 20 episodes of this. And then I was like, oh, I can't take any more, and I just haven't watched it since.
Yeah. No, that can happen sometimes.
But yeah, I think there's a 2-hour season finale this Sunday, or it's going to be the next 2 weeks on Sunday night on Food Network.
It's going to be up against the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, that's probably why they're doing it next week. There's four people left. There's Lou Diamond Phillips, Coolio, Joey Fatone of NSYNC fame.
The
one that's not Justin Timberlake.
Right. Or the other guy.
And this 80s pop star named Taylor Dane, who looks just like plastic surgery atrocious at this point.
Hmm. Right.
She is not fun.
She is not fun.
Yeah.
Is her cooking any good?
It doesn't look very good to me. It's like I said, it's all about Coolio. His charity is much cooler. I think he's you know, he's doing like an inner city thing.
Right.
And he's definitely a good guy to root for.
I wonder how far in the rounds I could go with just only making gruel. Gray matter stew.
I think if you throw some fancy ingredients like truffle oil or patchouli in there, they probably advance you along.
Sweet.
Like, it's gruel, but it's got lobster bisque in there somewhere.
Are there, like, celebrity taste test judges that kind of give them, like, a tongue lashing if they don't make it well enough, like other shows do?
No, it's pretty run-of-the-mill. If you're used to these Food Network reality contest shows,
right,
it's pretty much the same format. They'll bring in celebrities from other shows on the network, and then they'll have like, oh, you got to work in a food truck tonight, or like, oh, it's dessert round, and it's it's kind of mundane in that part, but it's the personalities that kind of bring it together and make it watchable, I'd say.
Ladies and gentlemen, Paula Deen with her diabetic boot.
Hey, y'all.
Prescription socks.
Prescription shoes and socks. You gotta get that blood flow down there.
Oh, God.
All right, so we have Guy versus Rachel. What else have you been checking out, Joe?
Another show I think you also checked out was the FX premiere of an animated show called Unsupervised.
I did check that out.
Written by, produced by some of the It's Always Sunny guys. I kind of had a question of my own. I was kind of hoping Ben was here. Maybe you can stuff this in his mailbag, but...
Yeah, I can stuff it in a sec.
Yeah, the three main characters on It's Always Sunny, Glenn Howerton, Charlie Day, and Rob McElhenney, they produced this show. I mean, but what does that actually mean in the scope of like a, you know, an animated show like that?
Yeah, I definitely don't have the answer for that. So, perhaps Ben in the comment section, I'm pointing down
because I feel
no
like
one can see me.
Yeah, I feel like you want to get to give them a lot of credit for this, but. It sounds like maybe they just financed it and then got some writers to write it.
Yeah, sometimes it could be financial production or like you could just, they're the ones putting their foot in the door for this show to get picked up by, like, you know, they have so much pull at FX, you know.
Yeah, and clearly they did finance it because the other characters on the show also show up in this show as voice actors.
Yeah, like Caitlin Olsen, I think, was on it this
episode. Which girl was she in that episode?
I'm not really sure. I just know she had a voice.
Was it Rocket Tits?
Maybe.
Dude, she don't like being called that.
Hey, man, anyway, they're just bags of fat.
Anyway, what did you think about Unsupervised? I want to get your opinion first.
It was kind of weird because it's a lot like Beavis and Butthead, only a little more... teen angst than just teen stupidity, like just dumb kids doing dumb things. But yeah, I mean, it was dirty, just like sometimes It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia can be.
But
generally it was just kind of that stupid humor that people are just falling in love with, where it really doesn't make sense, so you kind of have to can't take it too seriously. Like, you can't really judge it by normal standards like the internet community would. But no offense, Joe. But yeah, I mean, I liked it, and I like that its lead-in is Archer, right?
Yep.
So anything following Archer is probably...
10:30 p.m. on Thursday. FX following Archer.
On Thursday.
Eastern Standard Time for you cats out there.
Right. That would be 9:30 Central Time.
Also, yeah, put this in Ben's mailbag as well.
Okay.
Like, if Monday Night Raw on USA, Monday Nights Live, is on at 9 p.m., what time does it come on in Ben's time out there in La La Land, you know?
They never get, well, I mean, yeah, they never get it live, I don't think.
These are the questions I want.
Like, the Oscars are on at, like, 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock over there.
Because you think USA would show a repeat of the show at like 1 a.m. or something, but they never do.
No, what they should really do is set the world on Eastern Standard Time. And so if it just happens, if the sun is out at like 11:30 at night, so be it.
Okay.
I mean, that's my interpretation.
That's one rung above the video of the girl saying she wants to end global warming with outdoor air conditioners.
Same logical step I would have made. I see no flaw there.
That's a great video if you guys haven't checked it out yet.
But did you like Unsupervised? Did you like it at all?
Yeah, I actually really liked it. I thought the two main characters were really endearing. Like, I mean, you know, they're going in that first episode, they kind of transition from, you know, doing kid stuff to finding out about more grown-up stuff in high school, and then just kind of shedding that outer layer of boys and trying to become men.
Right.
I thought it was pretty spot on in some points, because, you know, anyone who's watching this has, you know, been there, I think.
Yeah, I can't wait till I get to that point in my life.
When you just stop reading comic books and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah,
well,
it was
insurance.
It was very Beavis and Butthead, because Beavis and Butthead, like, live in this house like by themselves, even though they're like 15 or 14 years old. They just have this entire house to themselves, just like the guys in Unsupervised. The other thing was the guy who smelled his cast, that like the really weird guy.
Yeah.
That they were just kind of trying to steer clear of, because that was like the old boys versus the new men.
Yeah.
That guy was pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought, I don't know why the internet craps on Justin Long so much. I mean, it's just him doing a voice.
Well, it's because he gets all the good-looking girls in Hollywood.
I guess so. I don't think... I mean, for the episodes I've watched of New Girl, I kind of stopped watching that show, but I thought he was pretty funny on that.
Yeah, he really fits into the mold there, especially with that awkward, weird character that Zooey Deschanel has adopted.
Yeah, and there was a lot of... I kind of agree with you. I saw a lot of Mike Judge type of stuff in there, like the I forget his name, but the Aussie neighbor.
Oh yeah, yeah, the Mr. Kinda Anderson fits, or whatever his name.
Yeah, he could be like a Mr. Anderson or a John Redcorn from King of the Hill.
Nice. Yeah, he was definitely reminding me of Brian Brown from FX and FX2.
My only strike of this on this movie was Kristen Bell's character.
Okay.
Not an attractive cartoon.
Well, that's some people might find that secretly funny. Megan Mullally's character on Children's Hospital. They went on record as saying she's like Megan Mullally's like one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood, and then we just give her all of these disabilities and turn her into like one of the ugliest characters on the show, and they think that's hilarious.
But I was just expecting so much more, thinking, oh, okay, Kristen Bell's gonna slut it up on this show. For the kids, like she's gonna be there
for the kids.
Yeah, I just didn't know they would give her the braces and the cleft palate a la Butthead. it was sad.
Oh, Beavis.
Seriously, anybody check this show out, and if that girl doesn't have the same exact mouth as Butthead, I will pay you on PayPal myself.
All right. We have it right here, folks. Joe, Panther Joe, will fork out on PayPal.
Spoiler alert, I have no money.
No money. PayPal will give you a balance of zero.
I will pay you in pogs and Pez dispensers. That's what I can afford.
That doesn't sound bad. All right, do you have anything else for media consumed?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about a movie real quick, a fake... I don't know what's come to this country, but fake documentaries or fakeumentaries, I think they call them.
Folkumaries, maybe?
Folkumaries are all the rage. Last year was two of them, Exit Through the Gift Shop, which all you guys loved, apparently. And then another one, Catfish, which the creators of still insist to this day wasn't faked.
Okay.
Clearly, the evidence is all there. It mounted, and it made it a big pile of poo, I thought.
Hmm.
Catfish, if you guys haven't heard, is the movie about the guy
who... You got spoilers coming, Joe?
Oh, yeah. We're going to spoil the hell out of this movie.
We're
going to
spoil the hell out of Catfish, so turn the dial.
Dial up the spoiler music. Turn up the Led Zeppelin. You know, let's talk about how these guys went on Facebook, found this family or found this girl, and basically documented how they learned to realize that she wasn't who she thought she was, which big surprise on the internet. People masquerade as other characters.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. So I've never
can't
heard
believe
of such a
that's
thing.
That's groundbreaking stuff they unveiled right there. you haven't seen this or heard of it, Tyler?
I've heard of it, but then I quickly forgot about it because of my disinterest.
I mean, it's
topic.
Worth a watch. It does utilize Facebook as kind of a familiar landscape for our generation.
Okay.
You kind of go on there and you're like, oh, there's little, you know, there's actually screenshots of Facebook and like pictures that are tagged, and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then the whole story just kind of falls apart, and at some point there was a couple like mentally handicapped, extremely mentally handicapped people in this movie, and
extremely
just,
handicapped.
Yeah, like
wow.
Like level 10.
out of 9.
they had to, I don't know, they were being filmed and probably didn't even know it and being taken advantage of by these guys who, I think, okay, they found out, I think what happens is they found out really early on that this guy was getting messed with and then made a movie of it after the fact and after he publicly exposed her for her chicanery.
Okay.
And then they filmed that and everyone kind of played in on the gag of, oh, that, I'm not who I said I was. Like, you're not meeting a girl. I'm just an old lady. I think what happened here was they had a really good idea for a script for a movie that they could have adapted, and they just went with the documentary, and it was sad.
Hmm.
It was fun to watch, but it wasn't as advertised.
Still have zero interest in seeing it. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, if you're like I said, if you're into Exit Through the Gift Shop, if that gets your film blood going, you might want to check this one out, because you're like, oh, it's like I'm getting smarter by watching this documentary, but really I'm not, because they're not telling me anything and it's all fake.
Okay, all right. Well, if you're into that kind of stuff, feel free.
And read Ben's review from 2011, I want to say. He considered it one of his, I'd say, top 15 movies of that year.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
I didn't see it at all.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, always check out Not Just New Movies for any reviews of any movie. If we don't have it, request it, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I will watch anything as long as I can get my hands on it and it's legal.
Nice. Yeah, stop that online piracy, Joe.
Yes.
All right, so for my media consumed, I recently saw a couple of new movies. Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Have you heard of this, Joe? Have you seen this?
Is that a new movie?
Yeah, it's a new...
In theaters?
Yeah, it's still... I think it came out a couple weeks ago, but it was still in theaters as far as last week.
I have literally never heard of that movie.
It's a movie about the Cold War and spies within British government dealing with a double agent amongst them. And the whole movie is Gary Oldman.
Can we just stop calling it the Cold War and just call it the 50s?
No, because the Cold War went past the 50s.
I feel like there was no war fought and it gives a bad name to wars.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. The Cold War wasn't actually a war. It was a war of kind of suspense more than anything.
So let's change it to Russian fun time or something. Just
well, they technically weren't Russia either. They were the USSR. So you're wrong on all counts.
Man, I am not a history person.
No. So Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, in the movie, Gary Oldman, who I really like as an actor, plays Smiley, who he was part of this Secret Service or a secret government organization, and then he was fired. John Hurt's also in it. He's really good, although really unutilized in this particular movie. And it's really confusing. It's really complicated. It's really slow. But if you like spy movies, I guess, but not like James Bond spy movies, but like actual possible spy movies, I would check it out. I mean, it's kind of interesting. The dialogue's really good. The suspense is really good. It's based on a book. And I don't see myself reading the book because the movie was so dialogue light. And so I would assume the book is a lot of just setting the scene through words. So probably, at least for me, the movie was probably the better option. But who knows? Maybe I'll read the book and I'll love it or whatever. I don't know.
So it was really slow and about a time no one cared about. And you said you liked it?
Yeah, thanks for just owning me on that rhetorical question.
All right, that sounds swell, Tyler. You probably like Syriana as well.
I hate you. Also saw Haywire with MMA and American Gladiator alum Gina Carano. I believe I'm saying that right. I recently friended her on Twitter. Still waiting back on the friend request, dude. I mean, that's what Twitter's all about. You follow
her.
They follow back. Haywire is this long-awaited...
It's probably the girl from Catfish.
Ben reviewed this a couple months ago for the AFI Film Fest, and I didn't read it at the time. but I knew about it. I guess I didn't know he wrote a review because I was going to write a review of it, but I didn't find out till later he wrote a review, so I didn't write one. But Haywire's about, it was this movie built around Gina. Soderbergh found, saw her in a fight or something. He was like, this girl needs her own movie. And it feels a little bit like that because it also stars Michael Douglas, Antonio Banderas, the guy who played Obi-Wan Kenobi. I can't think of his name right now. Shit.
Gary Oldman.
No. Yeah, let's just say Gary Oldman as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Channing Tatum.
C. Tates.
And it feels like a movie that was built around her because she's not an actress. And Ben says this in his review, but I was thinking this at the same time before I read the review. Like, she can only be directed so well, and it's going to take her time to actually, if she is an actress, to kind of develop as one. And such a big movie around a first timer, it's that kind of movie. I mean, it is really realistic action because it's not like John Woo action, as we'll get to in a second. It's a lot more real. Like, you can actually hear the fist hitting the skull. There's no real sound effect. And check it out. It's only an hour and a half. It's not this one of these long movies that they're coming out with, like two and a half hours for, like, I don't know, War Horse and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a pretty good movie. It's about Gina Carano or Mallory, and she's being kind of being undersold by her employers, and danger ensues. I don't want to give too much away. It's kind of a pretty good movie. So check it out if you have a free Friday or Saturday night. Take the girlfriend. Compare her to Gina, see how she feels about that. Just kidding. And finally, I watched Punisher Warzone, which is a highly...
Yes.
highly considered one of the, like, probably considered the best Punisher movie of the three, one of them including the Dolph Lundgren one. And it lived up to this... It lived up to its name. Yeah, back in the 80s, they made another Punisher movie.
You can't be the one of the best if there's just three of them.
Well, I mean, of the three, it's
you're either the best, which is clearly the Thomas Jane movie, or you're, I don't know what you're trying to sell this movie as, dude.
Punisher Warzone is really violent to the point where it's like comedically violent. Like at one point, like there was this recycling plant where they just basically blender style all these broken glasses, broken bottles of glass, and so there's just like shards of glass in this thing, and the Punisher tosses a guy into this blender of glass, and he just gets ripped apart, but he survives, and he's like the bad guy in this movie, and he's just got a totally effed up face. And
yeah,
his
Jigsaw.
Brother, yeah, Jigsaw. And then his brother's a loony bin Jim, who they actually break out of the asylum, and he's like a cannibal, part cannibal, just, and anytime... Like, you'll see it throughout the movie, anytime Jigsaw's anywhere, like, Loony Bin Jim will break any mirror in the room because he doesn't want his brother, Jigsaw, looking at his face, so he'll just, like, headbutt any mirrors and just break them. The guy who plays the Punisher is really awesome. He hardly says anything, but he'll rip your face off.
I mean, I really like this one, too. I didn't think it was as good as Thomas Jane incarnation, but
one with
yeah
I remember that one being pretty good. I'll have to watch that one again.
Watch it again. It was really good.
But Julie Benz was in this one, so I thought that,
tell me about it.
That would put you up in the top one, the one spot out of three.
I am a Julie Benz backer.
So it's not available on Netflix Instant, but you can get it through the DVD, and I would highly suggest you do so because it is worth the wait.
Julie Benz, she absolutely cleaned up on these kind of B-level sequels to movies.
Right.
Not only was she in this, but she also starred in the second Boondock Saints. I don't remember what it was called, but
Boondock Saints 2.
All Saints Day. Yes.
Yeah.
And
still looking
pretty foxy. If you like,
she's pretty non-existent in this movie, though.
Whatever, dude. But if you like Julie Bowen, Julie Bowen's like the backup to Julie Benz.
What? No way.
She's pretty much the top. She's the LeBron James of Cougars, I think, right now.
Oh man, that is some tall words, sir.
I'm just looking at the IMDb for Punisher Warzone, and Newman's in this as well.
Yeah, I would love to do an episode on Punisher Warzone, but they how did this get made?
Oh, you know who Looney Bin Jim was?
Who?
That's Doug Hutchinson, the 50-year-old guy that's married to Courtney Stodden.
I'm not familiar.
It was all over the internets. That's about to die this year.
Right, blogging.
He's a really old guy. He married that 16-year-old girl.
Really?
The Soup parodies
yeah.
it a lot.
Oh, I know who you're talking about now, but is that the same guy? That's Looney Bin Jim?
Yeah, that's Doug Hutchinson, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's weird.
He shot and he scored, sir.
All right, well, I'm done. Let's move on to our review of Hard Target. Target Harder.
Die Hard 2. Die Harder.
Die Harder.
In the city of New Orleans, in a darker side of Dixie, away from the music and the lights, there's a new game in town.
You'll be provided with a guide, trackers, and the weapons of your choice.
I need to file a missing person report.
The competitors are deadly.
We pride ourselves in hunting only combat veterans, men who have the necessary skills to make our hunts more interesting.
They always win.
You want to find your father? Get somebody who knows the city to show you around.
Now, the opposition is about to get one last chance.
What kind of a name is Chance?
My mama took when.
My friend, Mr. Boudreaux. Silver Star, Marine Force Recon. He's obviously not someone we should underestimate. He is an annoying little insect. And I want him stepped on hard.
We need to get out of here now.
Ladies first.
What?
These men will chase after you. You mad at you for business or pleasure?
Both. Look at it this way. You're gonna get to meet Elvis. Give it a rest, pal.
Jean-Claude Van Damme is the Hard Target.
You miss me?
From internationally acclaimed action director John Woo.
How's it feel to be hunted?
You tell me!
Hard Target.
All right, Hard Target, directed by some guy. I don't care, whatever. Starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. I'm just kidding. It's directed by John Woo.
Woo!
Starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels. Let me just say this up front. I don't think there is really a bad Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. I mean, there are good Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, and then there are not so good Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. But I don't think there's really a bad Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. It kind of exists in its own genre. And if you take it out of its genre, sure, people are going to critique it for its suckiness. But if you keep it within its genre, keep it within its own context, you get some pretty good movies. And Hard Target's one of those. What did you think about Hard Target, Joe? Have you ever seen it before? Do you have any initial thoughts?
Yeah, first off, about that JCVD comment, I mean, there's movies like Sudden Death up at the top, and then everything else he does is great, and then there's nothing below it. Nothing below great.
I like that we agree on this point.
He was probably doing just mounds of coke at that point, too.
Well, yeah. And then, it would get caught in his mullet, space.
Yeah. Yeah, I had actually, when you and Ben asked me to be on the show and you told me about Hard Target, I had no idea what that was about, and I was just like, oh man, this sounds like a pre-1999 Vin Diesel movie. I might not like this one.
It was the Diesel of the 90s.
And I saw the screen cap on my Netflix feed, and I just was like, wow, I've watched this within the last calendar year. Within the last year. Like, I have, it's all Van Damme, mullet, New Orleans, most dangerous game, in your face, blow up, everything blows up, boom, skedaddle, bad guy's dead.
Oh, yeah, and the moto surfing, and then it blows up.
There it is. We just reviewed the whole movie right there.
Paint can blows up. just everything blows up in this film. It's awesome.
The motorcycle caused that car to blow up.
I'm pretty sure it, like, the gasoline coming from that tank, Like, it just kept flowing out as if there was, like, 100 gallons in that little tank.
The explosion, when John Woo finally cuts the explosion, it looks like a 3-story building blowing up. It was insane.
Thank you, John Woo.
Whatever, dude. You're kind of overrated.
Kind of. Unless you watch Hard Boiled.
Or, like, Soft Boiled.
Alright, so, do you have any notes that you want to bring up with Hard Target? I mean, already from the beginning, you have to see this movie. I mean, there is nothing I can really say other than that, except what I'm about to say, which is just very small likes about this movie. No dislikes.
Just get yourself in the action state of mind. Personally, I've kind of steered clear of the action genre lately. It's kind of I don't know, not worn out its welcome, but I've kind of moved on to bigger and better things.
Like fake documentaries.
Yeah, like TV actors just move on to movies. I'm like, I've been there, done that. yeah, you got to get in that mindset and to just, you know, turn off your brain almost, because from like an interworld sense, this movie makes no sense. They are basically filming and telling us what happens in the story within the movie set. There are no repercussions to anything. There are no people. There are no witnesses to anything.
I'm going to have to disagree with you, Joe, because I think I live in a world where a guy can take 16 bullets to the chest and not die, and then one more bullet does the deed.
I'm not just talking about this.
It seems completely logical to me.
Okay, I think we gotta rewind a little bit and tell these people what this movie's about. Basically, Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's a hobo, right, in New Orleans. He goes by Chance Boudreau. Of course, it's spelled all Cajun-like.
Right, because his mom took a chance, so
yeah.
She named him Chance. She was so literal that she named him what she took by having unprotected sex.
And the movie starts out with these guys. You see these guys chasing another guy through the fields of gold in New Orleans or whatever.
They're shooting
him with arrows and all that stuff. And you quickly learn that this is kind of like the most dangerous game. They're hunting humans,
kind of
in New Orleans.
Right.
And we find out later that this guy had family. And people are looking for him, which uncovers the investigation of, like, what's going down here?
Yeah.
And then Jean-Claude Van Damme's character, Chance, gets entangled in the mess. And before you know it, they turn their attention to Van Damme, and they're hunting him. But what they don't know is that he's, like, the most dangerous hobo you've ever met. And he actually starts to hunt them.
I think they initially wanted him to be the guy that they wanted to hunt, and then whatever, the fat guy that owns, like, the sex advertising business, like, he couldn't get Boudreau, he couldn't get Chance, so he got this other guy that they were hunting.
Yeah, he got his token black friend.
No, and then that was the second guy that they got.
Yeah.
They couldn't find Chance or anybody like that. But yeah, that was just the way they introduced Van Damme. I always love how Van Damme's introduced in these movies, because there's either...
Are you talking about the first shot of him?
No.
But it just hands
kind of
onto his bullet, and then he, like, and then shows his eyes, and then, like, it takes, for whatever reason, it takes John Woo to tell the story in what could be, like, a second or two. It takes him 10 to 15 seconds.
Yeah, you gotta let the pigeons fly by first before you actually get
so
to the scene.
So many pigeons and doves in this movie. My God.
But, yeah, just like the fight scene, you can never, like, Van Damme never, it's never natural introducing Van Damme. It's always going to be, like, somebody getting robbed, and Van Damme just comes out of nowhere and just kicks ass, and then that's our introduction.
Well, in the opening bar scene, the girl, the original hobo's daughter who comes looking.
Right.
Who comes looking for him and
I think that's how she was listed in the credits.
Yeah,
original
Natasha.
Hobo's daughter, the new flavor at KFC.
Natasha, she flashes a bunch of cash in this, like, seedy bar, and, like, right. Oh, you got any change for this money right here? And she goes out and
change for 100.
She goes out in the broad of daylight, and just and then these four never do wells come out and, like, hey, Missy, you're gonna give me that cash right now.
Yeah.
And then they pull her aside, and we're going to get some extra things, too.
Yeah. It's always like, hey, wait, if we can take her money, we can harass her to death, too.
Yeah, and then Van Damme comes out and just totally obliterates these guys.
Oh, yeah. Like, the one guy, no, that was later, but, yeah, just one roundhouse kick and just completely.
Oh, yeah. I kind of thought, I was kind of worried because I thought this was going to be kind of one of those movies where you don't really sense he's in danger the entire movie, and you're just kind of like, oh, you're just waiting for him to beat up all the bad guys.
Right.
Because the first time I saw this movie, I was with other people who were talking a lot, and we kind of missed a lot. We just saw it, and, you know, we're probably drunk, who knows.
Okay.
But actually halfway through the movie, or a little before that, you actually see Van Damme get the kind of the crap kicked out of him, and you're like, oh, man, maybe these bad guys are for real.
Yeah, seriously. I also liked kind of his, again, pseudo introduction at the docks where she's asking somebody or no, he's trying to get a job at the cargo ship, and she was offering him like $200 to help her find it, her father, and he's like, no, I can't do it. And then she's about to get in her car.
Nice impression.
And then the forklift pulls out, and Van Damme's just standing, trench coat, mullet, just staring right at her, like waiting for the forklift to move to make his entrance. And she's like,
"Yeah,
all right, I know what he's looking for."
I can see John Woo behind the director's chair, or whatever, be like, "All right, that forklift, hold it, keep holding it."
Did you notice that Van Damme was a able seaman?
He was looking for that cheddar, and when he announced his union, or when they announced his union dues were due, and right, they were $117, you know, he's so kind-hearted that Natasha's character offered him a bunch of money, and he was like, no, only give me $217 and I help you with the rest.
Right. He looked at the camera at one point too in that intro fight. I thought that was really awesome.
You know, he was probably knowing he was about to bang Yancey Butler, Natasha's character.
Oh yeah, the original hobo's daughter.
She was she was, man, those 90s girls, man. They either had the eyebrows or they didn't.
Yeah, man, you're talking about the girl from Ferris Bueller that was in Time Cop, another Van Damme classic. Yeah. All about the eyebrows. How'd you feel about Arnold Vosloo's character?
Oh, yeah, we've got to talk about these bad guys, because that's probably another thing that kind of made this movie interesting. Arnold Vosloo is, like, the quintessential bad guy. He's got the bad guy long, dramatic face. Like, in 30 years, he could probably portray Mr. Burns in the live-action Simpsons film.
Well, he's famous for his role of Emotep in the Mummy franchise this year.
Yeah, he's familiar. I'm bringing up his discography.
Oh, Joe, you're using the internet.
Yeah, he was also in G.I. Joe as a bad guy.
Yeah.
Chuck as a bad guy. Blood Diamond as a bad guy. 24 as a bad guy. Ooh, a really good bad guy. He was also in a movie called Forgiveness as a his character was Tertius Coetzee. That sounds like a bad guy name.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Alias, bad guy. Agent Cody Banks, bad guy.
How do you know he's a bad guy?
Charmed, bad guy.
All right, we got it. He plays more often than not, a villain.
Zeus and Roxanne, bad guy.
I think he was a better bad guy than the main organizer of the most dangerous game.
But he was in Darkman 3, Die Darkman Die as Darkman. so he was a good guy at one point, then he turned heel.
There's three Darkmans?
Yeah, Darkman 3, subtitled Die Darkman Die.
That's kind of interesting, because I think Sam Raimi started Darkman. I don't know. But Sam Raimi had a hand. He was supposed to be, I think, the original director of Hard Target, and he couldn't do it, so they got John Woo instead. But in one scene, you see Sam Raimi's brother, Ted Raimi, who's pretty famous for not doing anything except for cameos.
Okay.
So he was in a scene where, you remember the one where the hobo, the black guy that was being shot in the middle of the street.
Yeah, hobo number two.
Yeah, and he was like, somebody help me, somebody call 911. It was Ted Raimi's brother that said, get out of here, pal, I don't have any change. And then stared him down and then walked away.
That was another problem I had with it. That's what I'm talking about, where everything... It's like these people didn't even acknowledge that this guy was shot several times.
Yeah, he was clearly holding a bleeding wound.
Yeah, he was bleeding in something... Like, he tried to crawl into an establishment, and some guy, like, kicked him out, like, ah, we're closed!
Yeah, like Hobbesian dynamics have taken over the city of New Orleans, where people only care about themselves.
Yeah,
get the hell out of here.
If only they knew it was coming in, like, 10 years.
I have a question here I wrote down. Is that an 80 gauge? Did you see the shotgun that Vosloo had when he got to the fat man's car? And it was like probably 4.5 feet long.
It was like a mini cannon.
He has to reload that like every 6 months.
Yeah, I think I've seen enough Pawn Stars to where I know those are called, like, yeah, they're called, like, I think they're really called mini cannons, where you just shove a bunch of projectile in there and just whatever's on the other end of it gets exploded,
yeah,
pretty much.
Decimated. Nice.
Yeah, he just, and you know, tied for second, obviously the main bad guy played by this guy Lance Hendrickson. I'm not too familiar with him, but his dynamic of him living in that antiquated house with the grand piano,
right?
And one of the other lackeys towards the end, they showed this guy quite frequently, but he was the cowboy looking guy in the red button down shirt,
mm-hmm.
always with the cigar in his mouth.
Yeah,
there was a scene later in the movie where the barn blows up, and these guys go flying, typical action movie style, and this bad guy with a cigar in his mouth still has the cigar in his mouth while he's being, like, blowed up into the air and landing on the ground.
That man loves his tobacco.
It was kind of the end of him.
The cancer might have actually grown around the inner side of his mouth, like hinging the cigar, and so it's now an appendage of his body.
Yeah, kind of like those cartoon characters that they can talk and it stays in their mouth.
Right. That brings me to my next point, which is brought up by a note in my a question in my notes. No, seriously, is that Colonel Sanders? Wilford Brimley comes in later. As
Uncle Duvet.
As Chance's uncle, who's running a moonshine, almost like a moonshine lab, like a meth lab, except for moonshine.
No, you could tell it was just for personal use. That's fine and dandy down there.
Wait, do meth labs, are meth labs used for personal use or just for...
Well, no, comparing...
For commerce.
Comparing meth labs to moonshine stills is kind of heavy-handed. In those, like, still, people to this day have, like, moonshine setups where they'll just make it for themselves.
Oh, no doubt.
Like, Harlan County Justified wasn't joking about that apple pie that Mags Bennett was rocking.
Yeah, they really weren't joking around.
Even though they were selling weed on the side, like, a lot of those, I think I have family over there, too.
That barn was ridiculous and justified with how much pot was just growing. I was like, good God. A tear for my...
The Bennett fortune up in the air.
Yeah. Old Mags. Yeah, the other thing, the moto surfing scene. I mean, the ending was pretty ridiculous, where they go what they call the Mardi Gras graveyard, where I guess it's unused Mardi Gras floats and things. Like, I'm going to assume completely paper mache.
I don't know where they ended up. I mean, they were in... towards. Well, if you got to imagine the first part of this movie completely within the city of New Orleans,
yes,
and then they eventually go out into the bayou somewhere.
Yeah,
and...
where I didn't see one crocodile or alligator.
Yeah, or a person.
I was generally disappointed because
except
swamp
the people.
Except if I know anything about swamp people, there are gators and there are crocodiles just about everywhere.
I don't know if you noticed this
get
too,
the marshmallows.
But Arnold Vosloo and. The two bad guys, Van Cleef and Emile Fouchon, their henchmen just kept multiplying as they were dying.
Yeah, I think they were picking them up as they came across the bayou.
There were so many of these guys that, you know, would have been loose ends to their enterprise. they were so worried about the two loose ends back in the city, like the medical examiner and their contact from the adult company.
Yeah, everything is forgotten about in the city because, spoiler alert, the movie ends while they're in the bayou. So the death of the cop was forgotten about. Just everything that was going on in the city is completely now out of the picture.
The only cop in the movie, by the way.
Yeah, because they couldn't afford they couldn't afford extras to play a police department, so they go, well, how are we going to fix this problem? Oh, we'll just put the cops on strike.
Yeah, we'll just have her say stuff like, the wheels turn. They turn slowly, but they turn.
Yeah, she's still using a freaking typewriter in 1993. I guarantee you there were word processors in 1993, but...
There were Apple computers and, there were really good computers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the ending, I don't even think they were henchmen. I think they were customers. I think they had actually paid for the most dangerous game.
No, these guys were, talking about the guys on the motorcycles.
Those guys?
Yeah. Those guys kept coming like Rita's henchmen from Power Rangers.
Right. I called them the motorcycle bullies because when the guy was on the run going to the river at the very beginning, they were just like mocking him with, motorcycles.
They're called trackers or I forget the term. It's actually when you hunt a certain way, like for animals, those guys are in place of dogs. They'll actually kind of corral what you're hunting.
Oh, okay.
They're basically
if he makes it to the river, he wins.
Yeah, which I think they would kill him anyway. I mean, what's the end game there?
Oh, the dogs or the motorcycle guys?
No, there's no way those hobos were getting to that river. I mean, even if they did, they would have killed him anyway and taken back the money.
Yeah, because the one guy has the guy at the beginning had like a rocket launcher or something. He blew up like the dock.
Yeah.
And I was like, how can you lose at this game? Just like see him running and then shoot like 6 feet in front of him and he's gonna blow up.
Yeah, I guess it's. They're called, there's certain kind of canned hunts and dog hunting. It's pretty bad, Tyler.
Yeah. So anyway, they get to the Mardi Gras graveyard, and Van Damme strips down to his wife beater, a la every other Van Damme movie ever made. And it's him versus, like, I want to say 20 guys.
Those were the opening line odds of the... Yeah. When the bad guy was like, it's 20-1 in this building.
Wilford Brimley and Natasha come eventually to help him out, but really don't do anything. So Van Damme takes down just everybody, like swinging from chains up in the...
Wilford Brimley did a lot, man. He got drunk and he killed a few guys.
He got shot and just laid there, and then he got stabbed with an arrow.
And then he woke up and then took a swig of moonshine and was like, oh, that's okay.
Oh, that's okay, Chance. Did we win?
Just don't spill on it. It's going to kill my grass.
Roll credits.
I just love when he's chastising Natasha for, almost spilling the moonshine.
Yeah. And this movie ends on a terrible note. Not a terrible note, but it just ends abruptly. Usually there's an epilogue of some kind, something where the characters recover from the massive fight. But
That's how movies ended in the mid-90s, though.
Like, the end of the fight, and then you're like, okay, well, I wonder if anything gets better for them. And then the credit starts rolling, you're like, well, I guess we'll never know.
Okay, I mean, you all have been spoiled with your Lord of the Rings, where there's just 20 minutes of epilogue.
Well, all I need to know is if Van Damme got his job with the ship, first of all, did he pay his dues? Second of all, does he end up with the girl? Third of all...
That's clear, I mean...
Well, you never know, man. He's the nephew of a moonshine stillman. Like
they hit it off.
I think. I don't know. Maybe.
Did you ever see the Marky Mark Wahlberg movie Fear?
No.
Witherspoon. That movie that's the example of mid-90s awesome. I think they're awesome, man. They just get to the chase. I mean, the antagonist of that movie dies, and then I'd say 40 seconds later, the movie ends. Like, roll credits.
Alright.
It's just, like, they got the job done. You assume they're going to be fine, or most of them are going to be fine, and boom, out of the theater, done.
What I want from our listeners, or from the internet as a whole, is Hard Target fan fiction, where I actually find out what happens after the Mardi Gras graveyard fight. That's all I need to know.
Mmm... I think they start a family and they'll have harder target in 2015 when
harder target target harder.
Their son, yeah, hardest target. Their son has
that's
to.
That's a third installment.
Their son is kidnapped by a roving gang of pirates and forced to play the game.
There's a hardest target, Hard Target 3, and an Expendables 3 crossover movie.
Yeah, Channing Tatum plays Van Damme's son, who's entrenched in this game as well.
Did you know
Van Damme has to coach him through it to survive?
You gotta kick from the left, never the right. did you notice the famous New Orleans graveyard from The Chaperone?
Oh yeah, that's
they're running.
I forget the name of the graveyard, but that's featured almost exclusively in anything that takes place in New Orleans.
Yeah, you gotta get your camera on that site at least.
Even the Tony Hawk video game, Underground or whatever, that was one of the levels.
You can ollie off an obelisk or something.
Yeah, those what do they call those tombs?
Tombstones or tombs? Yeah, mausoleums sometimes.
Yeah, mausoleums. There you go.
Or refer to them as.
They put, you know, the tide, the water is so high they can't bury them underground or they'll just float to the top. That's why they made the mausoleums, Tyler.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
History.
So closing thoughts, Joe. Do you suggest this movie to the regulars of this podcast?
No women.
Wow, really?
And it's like that new Dr. Pepper 10. It's not meant for women.
Okay.
No, women shouldn't watch it.
That's weird, because I was going to suggest it as a perfect date movie, as I do with
all
my
totally
Van Damme films.
Sexist here.
As I do with all my Van Damme films. Perfect date movie. Talk your significant other into, like, hey, let's just stay in tonight. Oh, let's see what's on Netflix Instant, and just have Hard Target ready.
Okay.
That's my advice, and I guarantee you
froze on Hard Target, and there's no, you know, you can't move it. You can't move the controller, so.
Yeah, because Hard Target, man, it establishes a lot. It establishes that you care about a relationship, like Chance and Natasha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And tells us that when the shit goes down in New Orleans, that no one's going to be there to save you. You got to do everything yourself.
It also kind of says stuff that the 90s were pretty badass, even though they get a lot of rap, and that they just don't make movies like they used to, and... You know, this is a good time.
Yeah, I Van Damme, man, he's a rest in peace. He's a good guy.
He's not dead.
He might as well be.
Ouch. All right, so that was Hard Target. Next week, let's bring out the Apple II. Joe,
yeah,
I'm gonna...
can I stop you there?
I actually
created a new. You know, there's been rumors about movie tampering.
Okay.
There's actually no pictures of the Apple II. The listeners are kind of questioning whether or not this machine is real. So I had some of my engineering friends down here in Northeast Florida.
Did not know you had friends in the engineering department.
Yeah, put together parts and made a new randomized movie generator to prove to you guys that this is totally random and.
Okay.
The fix isn't in. These aren't predetermined or anything. This could come from any direction, as long as it's from like a major studio. Obviously, we can't get, you know, independent like film class movies or whatever.
Yeah, because I'm not watching
Or foreign movies from Denmark, because it's, you know, whatever. Screw that
filth country.
It's
filth. It's disgusting. I'm not watching that.
Yeah. So I'm gonna. Right. We don't have a lever. We just like have a keypad. It's kind of
okay,
like
that, me, yeah. That seems barbaric to me, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just gonna dial it up here.
All right, let's...
Okay, it's we don't have all the bugs worked out. It's actually printing out the name of the movie.
Oh,
it looks like
okay,
this was 2009, another action film.
Ooh.
Street Fighter : The Legend of Chun-Li is the movie. We're going to watch that next week. Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Joe, I think your machine might be retarded.
That
was generally probably the worst movie of 2009.
This is an actual movie. I'm bringing it up on my computer as we speak. It came out in 2009. It's has a rating of 3.7 out of 10. That's kind of good for action movies, I think.
It's absolutely horrific.
It's directed by a guy named Andres Barkarwick.
Unspeakable for a reason.
And it's got a slew of, oh my god, look at this cast. Kristen Crook of Smallville fame, Chris Klein, Neil McDonough, the new villain from Justified, Moon Bloodgood from Terminator 3, Taboo, Michael Clark Duncan. Oh man, this is gonna be a, I don't know what they're gonna talk about in this movie because it's a video game, but this is gonna be awesome.
Wait, is it a movie? It's a Street Fighter movie that's about video games, because that is deep, man.
Well, Street Fighter originally was a movie, I think, that was...
Yeah, it had Van Damme in it.
Okay, and then... Wait.
It was originally a video game, then they made a movie.
What came first? I think some sort of movie came first.
Yeah, that was... actually, yeah, you're right. There was a Street Fighter movie that I believe had Bruce Lee, or... it was a martial arts exploitation film. And I don't think it has anything to do with the Street Fighter video game franchise. But yeah, in the 70s, there was a movie, and I think it was Bruce Lee. It was called Street Fighter, yeah.
Well, there is only one.
They made like 16 sequels to it. Like Street Son Fighter of Street 2. Fighter.
It's like Son of Baconator. Have you seen those new Wendy's commercials?
Baconator.
They got a Baconator sandwich, and then, like, you know, normally they would just call it like a mini or like a junior sandwich, but they just called it Son of Baconator.
Good transition. Yeah, so if you're raring to go for next week, we're going to be watching Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li, so send in your comments. I'm sure going to be hateful comments.
Can we get Kristen Crook for this? What's she doing?
I will try to get Kristen Crook. I'm not going to guarantee anything, but I am going to invest time and money into getting Kristen Crook.
She is beautiful.
Yeah, maybe like 11 years ago when Smallville started. I don't know about now.
Man, I would have her over to watch Street Fighter right now.
Well, now that you mention it, let's finish up the character name game, Joe.
Okay. It's not Joe Pa.
It's not Joe Pa, nor a character that Joe Pa played. famed Penn State coach with 409 wins.
Yeah, I kid, honestly. I am versed in the sports world, and
yeah.
I just want to say right now that Joe Paterno is and will be, until someone dethrones him, the greatest football coach in college football history. If you want to write to us or
argue that's Bobby Bowden.
I'll be on the show next week as well, because Ben's still in Idaho or something.
He's at Moondance.
You can argue Bear Bryant. You can argue Bobby Bowden. Bear Bryant does have more national titles, but he was doing it in a lesser conference back then in the 60s. The SEC wasn't a power conference. The Big Ten was where it was at in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Joe Pa, that's when he was doing it. So
yeah, two national championships in the 80s, I believe.
He had one in 96 and one in 84, 85. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, he only won two. Bear Bryant, I think he won five, and he won, you know, he had a better winning percentage overall, but like you said, the power schools weren't the SEC back when he was coaching.
Right.
And even, you know, people think the system now in college football is bad. It was even worse back then. You would play whoever you wanted, and then you would play in a bowl game that wasn't a 1-versus-2 matchup. And if you won that, then voters would vote again and be like, "Okay, those guys are the tight. Those guys are the champions."
Wow, that seems flawed from the beginning.
It was terrible, terrible.
But regardless of your insistence, it is not Joe Paterno.
Okay.
The man, nor the movie, if there ever
crossed that off my list right now.
The character for the character name game is, though, Jack T. Colton. Jack T. Colton. Do you know which movie the character Jack T. Colton is in?
I think there's only one actor in the history of Hollywood that would be so brash enough to... so brazen to include a middle initial in his character's name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Steven Seagal here. So, wait, are we guessing the character or the movie?
You guess the movie.
Oh, I have no idea then.
Okay. Do you want me to just give it to you?
No, just give me a quick.
Okay.
What movies came out this week?
Haywire. Let me just say the movie I'm basing it off of is Haywire.
Gina Carano. Is it Mike Adamly in American Gladiators, the original version?
Close, but no. Not even close. According to my research, not even close.
Okay. I literally have no idea who was in Haywire. I wasn't paying attention when you were talking about it today.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Okay,
The director of the movie you're looking for is Robert Zemeckis.
The Facebook movie.
You mean
The Social Network.
I don't think that was a Zemeckis film, but either way, that's not right.
No, I'm getting him and Zuckerberg mixed up.
Yeah, it wasn't Zuckerberg. It was Zorkin, I think. Sorkin? I don't know.
Aaron Zorkberg?
The year this movie came out was 1984.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God.
Co-stars Kathleen Turner and Danny DeVito.
Kathleen Turner, Romancing the Stone.
That's right. That was
really
yeah. Colt T. What's his name? Colt? No, Jack T. Colton. Was played by Michael Douglas in Romancing the Stone. He was also in Haywire.
Oh,
yeah.
You learn something new every day.
You do.
I had only known about Romancing the Stone because they parodied it on Family Guy. So.
Romancing the Stone. You should all go to YouTube right now and type in Romancing the Stone theme song or music video, or whatever. Romancing the Stone is a pretty cool, pretty cool hit, let's say.
Unlikely.
There was also a sequel called Jewel of the Nile, but I digress.
Is that with Woody Allen?
No, it was a sequel to Romancing the Stone.
So it wasn't a Woody Allen film?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
As usual, you can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, or you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail, 904-469-NJNM or 6566. You can subscribe to this show for free in iTunes. If you do, leave us a quick review. Give us 5 stars or what you deem as necessary star-wise. We really appreciate all your support, listeners. So if you want to leave us a review, leave us a comment on our Facebook page. Or you can just follow us on Twitter at NJNMPodcast. You can always talk to us there. We generally respond, especially if you ask a question.
If you do leave a review, you'll be automatically entered in a drawing where you can win instantly $1,000 cash or a free Sega Genesis.
Yeah, that's coming out of Panther Joe's PayPal account. So take advantage while you can. Obviously, that's all. A parody of what we actually offer, which is nothing.
Yeah, well, no, you're entered in a drawing. I mean, obviously your chances aren't that good, but you'll be entered.
Right. Joe, where can we find you on the internet, buddy?
Nowhere.
Oh, death of blogging. That's right.
Blogging is I'm scripting my manuscript on offline.
All right, you're back in the world sphere, as you call it.
Yeah, I got I noticed there was a correlation of when I acquired my most recent employment and the last time I blogged about something.
Nice.
Which I think makes sense because real problems in this world, got to deal with insurance and can't believe twiddling my thumbs on the internet anymore, Tyler.
True dat. Well, if you want to find somebody who has embraced the blogosphere, check out Ben on all the places that you can see him at twitter.com/BenPears. You can also find Ben's writing and especially his Sundance coverage along with Dr. Venkman at geektyrant.com. If you look for the Sundance tag, you can click on that and you'll find all the Sundance stuff. You can also find his reviews at filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. And I don't see many of them nowadays, but they're a rare occurrence. They're a rare gem on the internet. The Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast, so you can check them out there. Music for our show opened with Jake the Snake's Roberts theme song, Do You Trust Me?, which is what Jean-Claude Van Damme utters before he punches a snake. So, Jake the Snake Roberts, Do You Trust Me? It all works out.
He punched it and then ripped out its rattler with his mouth.
Yeah, so that the other bad guys wouldn't hear that the snake is around. Kept it alive and used it against them. But you know what? I'm going to close the show with Fields of Gold by Sting, because everything, no matter what it is, should end with Fields of Gold. I'm just saying.
Good choice.
But thanks for joining us, Panther. I know the death of blogging is happening soon, but I hope you join us next week for this abysmal movie that you've chosen, Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. And
I didn't choose it. It came out of this machine, my friend's built.
Right. The weak keypad accessed machine that you brought.
We'll take a picture of it, and then we'll put it up on the, you know, Not Just New Movies Twitter feed. So, you know, these listeners don't feel like they're duped, you know? I feel like there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Yeah, it's intentional, dude.
I mean, really, where is Pat? You know, that guy hasn't been around in like 50 weeks.
Joe, there never was a Pat.
there was a, you know, in the first season of American Idol, there were two hosts, and it's like Pat's that guy that was.
Wow, that is thrown it way back. I actually remember all that.
It's like what happened to that? Like, he was so good, and then you know, just and then it's like boom, Seacrest.
Nah,
I'm not saying Ben is Seacrest, but boom, Seacrest.
Ben is Seacrest. Secretly, he actually is Seacrest. But no, Pat is real. We miss him dearly. But yeah, come back on the show, dude.
We might have a third person on though. With
possibly,
I'll definitely be there.
We'll see about that next week. It might be Kristen Kruick. Who knows? But join us here in the NPNM studios, and we'll see you next week. Bye. Eyes.